Bienvenidos a Cosmer 16, un programa dedicado a la obra de Brandon Sanderson y en especial al Cosmer, claro. Y hoy tenemos aquí, bueno, no sé, me cuesta un poco encontrar las palabras hoy. Ya veréis que es posible que me encalle un poco porque estoy muy emocionado. Pero antes de presentar al gran invitado, voy a presentar a Mario del Rincón de Hoyt. ¿Qué tal?
Hola, pues muy bien, muy contento la verdad de estar aquí. Como te digo siempre, gracias por contar conmigo y muy ilusionado de poder estar haciendo esto que sabes que me encanta una vez más.
Y gracias a ti, por supuesto. Y no sé ni cómo presentarlo, pero bueno, Jackson Dickert, autor, youtuber, podcaster y Hoyt. Sagaz, el primer Hoyt de la historia, el primer Hoyt canónico de la historia. ¿Cómo estás, Jackson? How are you?
¿Dónde está el baño?
Va a ser un programa bastante así.
Nailed it.
Para los que os estáis preguntando que por qué digo que es el primer Hoyt de la historia, es porque en la Dragon Steel Nexus 2024 hubo un evento llamado el Wallhoppers Ball, que básicamente era una boda canónica que sucedía en los libros del Archivo de las Tormentas, que no vamos a entrar en spoilers, no os preocupéis. Y cuando entramos, la sorpresa fue encontrarnos a Hoyt o Sagaz, o Wit en inglés, encima de un barril insultando a la gente que entraba. Yo soy uno de los afortunados a los que insultó, así que happy to be insulted by Hoyt. Y pues le hemos traído aquí para entrevistarle y saber qué se siente al ser el primer Hoyt. Pero antes de eso, vamos a conocer un poco a Jackson. Y si podrías hablarnos un poco sobre ti.
So, we would like to get to know you a little bit. Would it be possible if you told us something about you and spoke a little bit about you?
Yeah, so I'm Jackson Dickert. I have written books. I co-founded the writing software Campfire, which if you're a writer, you might have heard of. I've got two pugs who I treat like human children. And I love manta rays. Manta rays are my favorite animal.
Si entráis en la web de Jackson Dickert, es jacksondickert.com, podréis ver todo esto de las mantas rayas, de los pugs, todo esto que ha dicho. Es bastante gracioso. Jackson, he dicho que eres youtuber, eres autor y eres podcaster. No sé si podrías explicarnos un poco sobre vida como autor, tus libros, sé que has sacado un libro y que tienes otro preparado.
So, you're a multi-tool man. You're an author, you're a YouTuber, you're a podcaster. Would it be possible for you to tell us a little bit about your books and everything you're doing, like also your podcast and this stuff?
Yeah, oh my gosh, time is my enemy, without a doubt. I'm interested in so many different things and I enjoy creating. I just like making things. And so the biggest hurdle I run into is I have lots of ideas and not enough time to kind of tackle them all. So my life is kind of constantly trying to juggle all of the different things that I'm really interested in and that I really enjoy doing. As far as the books go, like I want to eventually write just fantasy books like Sanderson does. He is definitely like a hero for me. So my first book that I wrote is sort of like young adult, summer camp, like Boy Scouts, if you know what that is. And so I wrote that after I was trying to write a fantasy book and it was not going well. And my creative writing professor, he didn't like fantasy. And he was like, why don't you try writing something? Yeah, yeah. Why don't you try writing something closer to home that you know really well? And so that's when I wrote Quest for the Golden Plunger. And it was good because it got me really comfortable with dialogue. And so since then, I've written another book. It was about 114,000 words. I've got two fulls out with agents, so I've got my fingers crossed that maybe a trad publisher will be interested in that. But that one is sort of like V.E. Schwab's Vicious meets Gravity Falls with cryptids. And then the new thing that I just started this month is like I need to work on the elevator pitch, but the idea is a dwarf goes fishing and then he has to like fight the fish when they come out of the water. So it's in a fantasy setting. So he like goes to catch a minnow, and so he's reeling in the minnow, and when the minnow comes out of the water, it's a minotaur. So it's a minotaur, but instead of a bull and a fish, it's a, or instead of a bull and a man, it's a man and, or a bull and a fish. So it's kind of a funny, but, you know, hopefully still enjoyable fantasy.
Te das cuenta que todo esto que dices suena muy a Hoyt, ¿no?
And do you realize everything you're just saying right now sounds a lot like Hoyt?
I have to say, everybody at the ball, like all the other actors and people, they were all like, is this hard for you, like, to just be in this mode all the time? I'm like, I'm not acting, this is just who I am. And that made it really easy. Growing up, I was definitely always the class clown. I grew up with brothers, and I, all of my friends and their brothers, like, you get used to not only being able to tease each other, but being good at taking a joke and learning like where the line is for a lot of people, right? Because when you cross the line, it's suddenly things are not very funny anymore. People's feelings get hurt. And I am definitely one of those people who I have a lot of empathy, like too much, I think. To where like it's exhausting sometimes, like scrolling through social media and seeing all the bad things. And so I, going into the World Hopper Ball and playing Hoyt, like Hoyt, he's definitely like a smart ass, but in general, he's not super mean spirited. He is
unless you're kind of, Sadies.
Well, I was going to say, unless you deserve it, you know, if you deserve it, then he's a little bit more mean spirited. But in general, it's like he makes a lot of funny observations or about like that have like a kernel of truth to them, but aren't necessarily accurate. Right. And that's kind of what a lot of good jokes are, is like there's a kernel of truth and kind of pokes fun at something, I guess.
Tienes un podcast que personalmente me gusta mucho porque entrevistas a autores y unos muy famosos como el propio Sanderson o Joe Abercrombie, donde haces una parodia, y por eso entiendo que se llama así tu podcast, Between Two Ferns, basado en Between Two Ferns, típico podcast. Explícanos, cuéntanos algo un poco de este podcast.
So, you've got a podcast which I really like, and you've interviewed authors like Sanderson or Abercrombie. You also make loads of humor, and hence the name Between Two Pens, inspired by the podcast Between Two Ferns. Could you tell us something about it?
Yeah, so this show kind of started on accident. I went to Sanderson's house to do the Yumi and the Nightmare Painter book club. So if you go look at those videos, I'm in some of those as well. And when we were there, I found out that everyone was going to have 30 minutes to make some kind of content with Brandon. So Hello Future Me has recently put out the interview that he did with Brandon Sanderson at the same time. They put out the cover video that he did with Tran Nguyen. And he's got TikToks that he's done with Bethany Books. And so they all kind of went into it like they had like a script or a general idea. And I was like, I have no idea what I'm going to ask this man. Huh. Because I've been a huge Sanderson fan for years. I've listened to the podcast. I, you know, watch his lectures on YouTube. And so I was like, what in the world could I ask this man about the Cosmere or about like writing that he has not been asked a million times in the past? And I couldn't come up with anything. And I was like, okay, so what if instead I just ask him the dumbest questions imaginable? Just what if I do what, you know, what the most terrifying thing imaginable, just ask him really dumb and passive aggressive questions. And so I sat down, and while everybody else, they watched Your Name in his mm-hmm. theater, I sat outside the theater and I wrote up my questions. And so that's kind of how I got it start. In fact, I didn't even have the name Between Two Perns when we sat down to record the episode. We sat down on that couch to record, and Brandon was like, so what's this called again? Like, what do you call this thing? I was like, Between Two Ferns author edition. And he was like, I kid you not. Brandon thought for half a second. He was like, we can do better than that. And then go grab two copies of, you know, Dragon Rise of Pern from my library. He was like, Between Two Perns. It's perfect. And so that's so, how the show got its name.
O sea, Sanderson te dio el nombre.
So it's actually Brandon who gave you the name for your podcast.
Correct.
Esto no es por nada, pero esto es una, vamos, sería increíble que fuese alguien y le diese el nombre. Yo creo que tienes que estar orgullosísimo.
It's definitely something incredible and you should really be proud of it.
Thank you very much. Yeah, the proudest moment of my whole life, because I was going into this, I was terrified. I'm not only talking to my hero, but I'm at my hero's house. There's a couple times in the video you can hear people laugh. That was his family, some of his staff. Like, so I'm there, you know, and to insult him and to, you know, make jokes, even though he knew it was jokes, it was terrifying. And I wanted to it to be good. I wanted it to be funny. And so at the end, and I'm so sad because we had gone to the very limit of how long the cameras could record. They could record for 30 minutes. And so the cameras went off and he turns to me and I'm so sad that I don't have like a recording of this, like proof that it happened, so I can listen to it every night and have it be my like alarm clock every morning, because I would have it be my alarm clock every morning. In fact, it would be my text alerts. My phone would go off and it would be Brandon Sanderson's voice being like, that was really funny. I bet you do this all the time. And I was like, so that was an amazing, surreal moment. Whenever, like, you know, my brain starts being mean to me and saying, like, you're not funny or good at this thing, I'm like, yes, I am, because my friend Brandon told me I was.
La historia, o sea, es increíble. Ya solo por esto ha valido la pena charlar contigo.
Yeah, this is totally just an amazing story. And even if it was only for this, it would still be totally worth it for all this chat to be happening.
Oh yeah, thank you guys very much again for having me on here too. It's a ton of fun.
Como siempre, me olvido de las cosas. Es un clásico, o sea que ha de preocuparse. Pero por haber venido al podcast, ahora que has dicho que gracias por venir al podcast, no sé cómo te lo haré llegar, pero de alguna manera, si he conseguido dárselo a Katie Payne, te lo daré a ti. Pero tenemos un pin del podcast para la gente que viene.
So, Borja forgot, he said it's a classic of the podcast, and as he just showed you, there's a pin of the podcast, and he's not sure how he'll make it, but he'll make sure you get one. So he'll try to get one to you, because if it was possible to give one to Katie Payne, it'll be totally possible to give one to you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
Es un pin para la gente que viene al podcast.
And it's just for the guests. Nobody else has it, only the guests of the podcast.
Oh, very cool. So I'll be part of like an exclusive club. Very cool. Thank you very much.
Ahora que has hablado del podcast y de tu entrevista con Sanderson, ¿cómo, o sea, con qué cara consigues decirle a Sanderson que es un plagiador? Y a Joe Abercrombie, entre otros, sin que, no sé, sin inmutarte.
So, speaking about the podcast, how did you get to tell Brandon or Abercrombie that they are copycats without just totally chill, just telling them straight-faced and totally can't?
Yeah, so I whenever I email authors about it, I'm very clear. I'm very open. Like, this is what this is. I there's no game that I play where I'm like, I'm going to get them on my show and then trick them. Everybody knows going into it exactly what this is, what the vibe is. And there have been authors who have said, no, that's not really my thing. Trying to be funny on the fly or whatever, that makes me nervous and I'd rather not. And I say, no worries. I totally get it. It's not for, not everybody wants to sit down and be like roasted or made fun of for, you know, a little bit. So, but to actually sit down and do it, I think I had the benefit of doing Sanderson first, because when you do Sanderson as the first one and you sit there and you call him a plagiarizer, after that, it's all downhill. There's nothing I can say to anybody that was as terrifying as calling Brandon Sanderson a plagiarist. So that, I would say, built a lot of confidence. People's reaction, you know, to how much they enjoyed it, like that definitely built a lot of confidence. And what was nice about it too is the vast majority of people very quickly realized it was all satire. There's always a handful of people who are like, this guy's a jerk. Why is he saying that to Brandon? And it's like, oh no, you missed the whole joke. But most of the people get it by a wide margin. So I'm not too worried about that.
Has entrevistado a mucha gente, o a bastante gente, a bastantes autores, y están... Yo creo que dos de los autores de fantasía más importantes de este siglo, que son Brandon y Abercrombie. Y aquí en España tenemos quizá una visión muy sesgada de los autores de fantasía americanos que lo petan en Estados Unidos. ¿Cómo se vive en Estados Unidos ser fan de Sanderson?
Throughout your career, you've interviewed loads of big authors, but mainly two of the biggest in this century regarding fantasy, which are Brandon and Abercrombie. In Spain, there's a really way to see about American authors and stuff that are really great in the US, but how is it living as a fan of them in the US?
How is it living as a fan of them in the US?
¿Cómo se vive el es decir, Sanderson es tan famoso como nosotros nos creemos que es? ¿Abercrombie es tan famoso como nos creemos que es? ¿O allí realmente hay autores más que lo petan más?
So are they both Brandon and Joe as big as we feel them to be around there, or are there even bigger authors that maybe we don't know around here?
I mean, I would say Sanderson is kind of as big as you think he is, you know. People love Abercrombie. I mean, you can walk into any bookstore and there's Abercrombie as well. But I mean, definitely Sanderson is huge. I'd say maybe a little bit bigger, like, to the mainstream crowd than Abercrombie is. But what's still really interesting about it is, like, for as big as Sanderson is, right? He's one of the biggest fantasy authors alive today. He can still half the time go to the store and, you know, not be recognized or anything. In fact, even telling my family, like, hey, I went and did this cool thing. For us, we're like, this is the coolest possible thing imaginable that you could ever do. Like, that's so cool. In my family, like, it was hard to explain, you know, like they didn't get it. It's not like I could say George R. R. Martin, because they know Game of Thrones, but, you know, they don't know Brandon Sanderson just yet. And so the thing I always try to explain to people is, I'm like, this guy is the next George R. R. Martin as soon as he gets a movie or a TV show, so that, you know, you all will be familiar with who he is. But he's already, like, huge. So it's interesting, because it's like, especially for, if you're a big reader or, you know, you're an author, obviously you're going to know who Brandon Sanderson is, but the average person doesn't. Just kind of funny.
Creo que estamos en ese punto donde Sanderson es lo máximo famoso que puede ser en el mundo de la literatura fantástica, pero aún no es un fenómeno cultural.
So, I feel Brandon is in the highest point he can get in the reading world, in the book world wise, but he's still not a mass market or a cultural phenom, a cultural movement by himself, like R. R. Martin could be, for example.
I think I agree, because I would also say, like, he's at the top, right? Like, he's at the very top. But then at the same time, he's nowhere near the top. If J.K. Rowling, right, is anything to go off of, like, that and maybe Stephen King. I mean, he's horror, but his stuff has fantastical elements to it. So, like, what's interesting is they've both had the mass market appeal to kind of get to everybody. And, you know, books that are, like, 10 series long, maybe, or 10 books long, maybe it's harder to have mass market appeal. And probably also just the vibe, right? Where it's like Stephen King, the vibe of all his books, they're very familiar for the most part. Even like Harry Potter, it's very familiar. It's our world, but then, you know, at a magic school. This is crab people and squishy things with 10 legs, you know, with slime all over them. It's like, you try to explain how that's a good vibe to somebody, and they're like, okay, I don't know.
Sí, sí, justamente. Pero es lo que tú decías. Es muy fácil reconocer a cualquier personaje de Harry Potter o It o lo que sea, pero de Sanderson nadie conoce a un Kelsier, a un Dalinar. Pero bueno, todo se andará, como tú dices, cuando haya películas y cuando haya series, seguro que acaba convirtiéndose en un fenómeno.
So, as you said, it's really easy to get to know, to recognize characters of other sagas as Harry Potter or It, but almost nobody knows characters like Kelsier or Dalinar, and things will probably change when there's an adaptation, a screen adaptation for the Brandon's job.
Without a doubt, and that's why it's one of those things. I wish I could go to Hollywood and shake somebody, because it's like the biggest no-brainer ever. And, you know, obviously they don't think so, but, like, just off of Sanderson's fans alone, like, he would do just fine. Like, the movie would do great. We'd all go see it 10 times each. Like, yeah. It's crazy that he doesn't have anything yet.
And even for Hollywood, he's already proven he's a money-making machine. You just have to look at the Kickstarters and the campaigns.
Yeah, yeah. If I had $200 million, I'd give it to Brandon to make a movie. Hands down.
Lo que pasa es que las adaptaciones tienen un problema, y es que seguramente, por desgracia, contratarían a otra persona que hiciese de Hoyt. Y yo ya no puedo imaginarme un Hoyt que no seas tú.
So, adaptations and all really have a problem, to be honest, and it's that they'd probably hire a different Hoyt, and I don't imagine a different Hoyt than you.
That's super sweet. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's been so surreal, like, to hear people say, like, they read Wind and Truth, and whenever they saw Hoyt, they saw and heard me. Like, that's incredible. That is the coolest thing in the entire world. And that's kind of what, you know, some people were talking about, is they were like, man, you don't know where this could lead you. And I'm like, well, I don't want to get my hopes up too high, because, you know, you never know. Hoyt can change what he looks like, so they could change actors every movie, they could change it every year, you know, you just never know. But I'm still very, like, honored and grateful, genuinely, that, like, to even have, you know, a couple people who attended the ball, like, think that. That's so cool. It's so cool.
Yo entiendo que es muy difícil para la gente que no ha ido al Wolves Hopper Ball entender esto que estoy diciendo, porque no lo habéis estado allí, pero la representación que ha hecho Jackson de Hoyt, o de Sagaz, en el caso del Archivo de las Tormentas, es literalmente como te lo imaginas. O sea, es que es perfecto. Los insultos.
So I understand it's really tough for people who has not been to the World Hopper Bowl to imagine this, because they've not been there. But your interpretation of wit is actually as you just make the mind picture while you're reading the books.
Thank you very much. it's like I when I went through and I got like, I found out I got the role, I was like, this is like everybody's favorite character, you know, like everybody loves this character. And I realized then I needed to go back. I reread all of Hoyt's lines from every book. I listened to, for years, I've been listening to the audiobooks through Michael Kramer. And what was really cool about, I guess, my portrayal was I had people separately come up to me who had, did not like hear the other person say anything. And like one person would come up and be like, you must listen to the Michael Kramer books all the time because like you sound just like, you know, Hoyt's Michael Kramer. Wow. And then I also had people come up and they said, you must listen to the graphic audio version all the time because you sound just like the narrator who does the Michael Kramer version. And I like that to me almost says something about like the character and the writing more than it does any of the three, you know, portrayals. It's like this character is so vivid that all three people understand, you know, the assignment. All three people are like, this is who this character is, and like kind of can portray them consistently even without having like talked to each other about it. That's so cool.
Ahora dejaré de echarte piropos, te lo prometo, pero y empezaré a hacerte preguntas, pero lo último que tengo que decir es que creo que el cast que eligieron para el baile estuvo muy acertado. Todos los actores estuvieron totalmente on point.
So I'll stop just telling beautiful words and I'll start actually asking you questions. But I think the cast was really on point. Every actor was really accurate for the role they were portraying.
Yeah, and thank you very much. I know they would like really appreciate to hear that as well. All of them busted their butts and did such a good job. They were all on point. And what's funny too is like, in a lot of ways, we were all kind of the same person behind the scenes too. Like they really did a good job with the casting. Like Wex was the actress who played Yasna, and like we got along so well behind the scenes. She was very kind of, have you ever heard like the phrase black cat, where it's like, you know, they'll act kind of aloof, but once you get to know them and you know, they're really friendly. It was kind of like that. And we got along so well. And it was fun after you get to know everybody too, because then you can kind of joke with them a little bit more on stage and throughout the performances across all the nights, because, you know, by the last night with Yasna, like I'm blowing kisses to her from across the room and stuff like that. And she's, you know, ignoring me. So it was a ton of fun. It was a ton of fun. The casting was great.
Vale. Y ahora empiezan las preguntas de verdad. Necesito que me cuentes la historia de cómo fuiste elegido. O sea, esto tiene que ser épico.
So questions are actually starting right now, and we'd like to start knowing how you actually got casted, because this is probably an epic story and we'd love to know it.
Yeah, so I did already kind of know people at Dragonsteel. I had visited them in their warehouse and that sort of thing, and so I a little bit knew ahead of time that like the World Hopper Ball was going to be a thing that they were like going to do. And so at the time somebody there had actually joked with me. They were like, oh man, it's too bad. You would make such a great Lopin, but you're, you know, painfully white. And I was like, ah, yeah, true. I was like, what a shame that I won't be able to, you know, do anything with this. And then it's really the fans who made me reach out at all, because I just assumed, I'm like, okay, there's nothing that I'll really be able to do, right? Like if Henry Cavill doesn't get to play Kaladin, then I don't get to play, you know what I mean? Like I'm not Henry Cavill. So I had, you know, kind of resigned to like, okay, well, you know, I'll still get to go to Nexus and have a great time. But when the video dropped, the announcement video of them saying, you know, like this is going to happen, the comment section was just flooded. The whole thing was just people saying, you need to have someone there playing Hoyt, insulting people as they walk through the door. That was just the whole comment section, was people begging to be insulted. And I sat there, and so I had a I played the lead in It's a Wonderful Life, if you've ever seen that movie. George Bailey, I played him in my high school theater, and so I've always enjoyed theater. And just kind of, I never expected to get to do it again. And it's one of these things, it's the most fun, amazing thing. Like, you work really hard to memorize your lines and to get everything down just right. Because if you mess up for a moment, you know, while you're there, then the whole thing just crumbles. And you're not watching that character anymore. Now you're watching somebody playing that character. And so I've always loved it. And I decided, well, I'll just shoot my shot. And so I sent them an email with a screenshot of the comment section of everybody saying, you know, we want Wit. We want somebody to play Wit. And all I sent them was a subject line that said, hear me out. And that screenshot. And they were like, oh, yeah, we'll probably get somebody to play Hoid. That'll be a lot of fun. And I was like, okay, well, I know you guys are going to do, you're going to be totally fine casting, right? Like, you don't need any help. But I said, if at the last minute, if somebody drops out, if you have had a really hard time finding people, whatever, I have a little bit of theater experience and, you know, I've spent the last year tactfully roasting people so that they don't get upset when I insult them. If you would like, I'd be happy to help out. And so they basically just gave me the link to actually like apply for the role. And so I, you know, I shared my experience. I submitted a resume, headshots, and a video where I like read the Oathbringer roast that Hoid does. And so based on all that, they ended up picking me.
Y eligieron bien.
They really chose well.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Vale, ¿esto con cuánto tiempo más o menos de antelación sucede?
And more or less, how much time was there between you getting to notice and the World Hopper Bowl?
Yeah, so I think I got the notice maybe like November 3rd, something like that. So it was probably like about a month or so.
Solo un mes.
Just a month. It's crazy.
Yeah. I think it's a hard role to cast for too, because somebody needs to have read pretty much everything to some extent. Like, if you're going to do it right and you're going to do it well, you need to have read everything so that you can recognize as many characters as possible, so that you can have as many like unique interactions as possible. By no means would I say like I remember everything and I'm a total expert on like the worlds and everything, but I know enough to, you know, about like I've read all the books, right? And that's all you really need, because you can understand, you know, whenever people would try to give me like a lore question as Wit, you know, I could be like, you know, I don't have the time or the crayons to explain this to you. You know, you can kind of hand wave it all away when you know who the characters are and kind of the playground that you're working within. So I think the vast majority of the cast had all read the books. And so that wasn't too terrible for me. I just went back and read back up on Hoid, read all his lines. I started writing some jokes that were like, you know, in-world jokes, and memorizing my lines, getting the voice down.
Y llega el día en que tenéis que reuniros todos y hacer los primeros ensayos. ¿Cómo funciona eso?
So you get to the day of everyone meeting and starting practicing for everything. How does it work and how did it work?
Yeah, so we did like two script readings, I think, beforehand. And they were just like on a Zoom call because we all live in different parts of the country. And so we just read our lines together, kind of talked through what everything would look like. And then when we actually got there, it was probably about like what you'd imagine. People were putting stuff up, getting all, you know, the set and everything put up. And then we stayed kind of in the backstage room where it was like a changing hangout room. It was just kind of where we were the rest of the time. And so we like set up chairs kind of in the same way that they were set up on the stage, so we could actually run lines and practice going through it while everything finished getting put together. So that whole first day that we got there, that like Wednesday, we practiced a good chunk of that day and made sure our costumes fit, made any last minute tweaks to costumes, all that good stuff.
Ahora lo veis así, con gafas y con el pelo un poco rizado, pero prometo, bueno, veis, seguramente en la miniatura saldrá él. Pero os prometo que entrar en el baile y lo primero que veas sea Hoyt encima de un barril insultándote es lo mejor que hay.
So, right now you're seeing him like this with glasses and curly hair, but I promise that just getting into the ball and the first thing you see is Wheat insulting you is something amazing.
And I can't tell you how happy it makes me that, like, that's what everybody says. Like, everybody's, like, walking in and Wit being there insulting people. That it is so awesome because, like I said, one of the most terrifying things for me was I didn't want to accidentally legitimately hurt somebody's feelings. That was, like, a really big, like, kind of sticking point for me. And what's so nice about the character is nobody's going to take what he says seriously anyway, because everybody loves the character and everybody knows like who he is, you know, they know that, you know, it's never anything personal. And so kind of two things about that. Most of the jokes that I said to people as they were coming inside, they were all pretty much based around either the person being stupid, the person being ugly, the person being smelly, I think was the third big one. Because the way that I see it, all of us are a little bit ugly, stupid, and stinky. You know what I mean? Like, some of the time, we all are a little bit. So, I did, though, I will mention, I did kind of my, the place that I went outside of that was whenever a bald guy came in. Because I don't care who you are, being bald is funny. My grandfather's bald. I'll probably be bald one day. So, I gotta take my shots when I can get them. But, my favorite like fan interaction that I had the entire time was it was after the first night, so it was on the second day, and I was walking through the convention. I wasn't even dressed like Hoyt. I was wearing like a Dragonsteel hoodie. I had just gone in to see some friends and then was going to get changed into costume and stuff, and this mom stopped me with her like daughter. Her daughter must have been like 12 or 13 maybe, and they said, are you Wit? Are you Hoyt? And I looked at them. I was like, yeah, you know, it's nice to meet you. And the daughter just started sobbing. She just started sobbing. She said, this is amazing. This is the best day of my entire life. She was like, I didn't get to take a picture with you last night. Can we take a picture right now? And I was like, of course we can take a picture right now. So we took a picture and she's like crying. She's so excited and so happy. And we get done taking the picture and she straightens up and she fixes her shirt, looks up at me and she goes, okay, now will you roast me? Like that was like the crucial part of the experience for her. Like she wanted to be roasted. And so
canonically, you know, roasted.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I roasted her and she was thrilled. She was over the moon. She actually sent me like fan mail and like a bracelet. Super sweet, super sweet. So it is amazing that character has like such an effect on people.
Aprovecho para decir, ya lo dije en el podcast sobre la Dragonsteel, pero aprovecho para decir que esto que le ha pasado a Jackson es algo que vivimos todos los que fuimos. Todos los trabajadores de Dragonsteel tuvieron un comportamiento excelente con todo el mundo. O sea, fue una gozada allí ya solo por la gente.
So I just want to say that this that happened to you is something that everybody who went to the convention felt. Every worker, everyone who was a part of it was just amazing and treated everyone extremely, extremely well.
They did. And that's what's so great about this fandom and this community is like, we're all kind of the same and we're all there for the same reason. And the nature of the books is that they're very like positive, you know? And so he really does have a fantastic fan base to where at those cons, like you can go anywhere and strike up a conversation with anybody. And you've got this huge thing in common that the two of you love. Like it's fantastic. It's really beautiful.
Has comentado que claro, era pues aprenderse el papel, las bromas y demás, pero yo lo primero que pienso en que me toca ser un actor en una obra de teatro, parecido a una obra de teatro, y lo que más me preocupa es la responsabilidad, el que todo el mundo me vea como Hoyt, el que sea un Hoyt válido para todo el mundo. ¿Cómo lo vives eso?
So, you've said you had to learn the character and the lines, you had to write and prepare jokes, but the first thing I'm thinking if I have to take part in a play is the responsibility. Because being seen as Hoyt and people starting to associate me with the character. So how did you actually feel it?
Oh, like, was there like a lot of pressure? There definitely was, but funny enough, like, I don't get, I'm one of those weird people. I know this is weird. This is not a normal experience, but like, I'm one of those people, I don't get super nervous in front of crowds. I'm generally very comfortable, like, speaking in front of crowds or just being in crowds. I'm an extrovert. So, it comes naturally to me. And like I said, I grew up being kind of the class clown. I like saying things loudly and having people laugh at my jokes. That's fantastic, you know? So while there was a lot of pressure, it was important to me that I would get it right. And so I was comfortable knowing I had put in the time, the effort, the research to do it to the best of my ability. So if I had come away from the ball and everyone said, all the actors were great, but Hoyt didn't do a great job, it felt like he phoned it in, you know, whatever. If that had been the reaction instead, I would have been disappointed, certainly. But at the end of the day, I would have been okay because I would have known I personally put my all into it. And that, for me, kind of relieves all the pressure. If I hadn't done the research, if I hadn't... I even emailed Michael Kramer. I sent him a voice clip and you know, kind of explained, this is what I'm doing. And do you have any notes? How does this sound? And he said, no notes. That's great. So going into it, knowing that they've picked me, Michael Kramer thinks, you know, the voice sounds great, and that, like, this is something that I've prepared a lot for. There's you've heard of the flow state before. So I majored in kinesiology, which is like exercise science. So the flow state was something that we were always, like, really interested in. And the research says that it happens when you have basically prepared for a challenge and you feel well prepared, but it's not easy still. It's still a challenge. It's that perfect place where your interest and ability level meet the challenge put in front of you. And I think because I had kind of I had prepared sufficiently, I felt like I was up to the challenge. And so while it is a lot of pressure, I felt really good about it. I was excited, and I really just wanted to knock it out of the park for nobody else than for me and Brandon Sanderson, you know?
Y ahora que has dicho Brandon Sanderson, la pregunta obvia es, ¿qué te dijo él?
So you've mentioned Brandon, and the obvious question is, what did he tell you about your interpretation?
So he actually, I heard two different things. So the first thing he said to me is, there's a picture where all the cast are standing there with Brandon in front of the entrance to Shadesmar. And while we were standing there, he turns to me and he goes, dude, that was great. He's like, you did great. And I was like, yes. Like, I was screaming internally. Like, I said, I'm really comfortable in front of crowds. I can talk to anybody. Brandon is the one person I panic a little bit when I talk to, because I'm like, you're so cool. Like, it's like, that's the one person that still kind of makes me panic a little bit. Like, I'm a teenage girl talking to a boy for the first time. So there was that. And then the last night, like, the last show was over and we were all kind of starting to get unchanged and all of that. And one of the Dragonsteel employees told me, and I was doing good, right? Like, theater kids, we kind of have a reputation for, on the last night, it's really emotional, right? Like, you've just spent like 4 days straight, 12 hours a day together. you're in a very tight space, and like it's cool because not always, but a lot of times it's like we're a team, and so we all work together and we like we make this happen, we get it done, you've all got each other's backs because we're all doing this hard thing together. And so a lot of times people will cry on like the last night, like it's all over and like you've just been at like the highest high and now it's time to come down, and there's a chance, yeah, that you might not get to do that character again. And so I was holding it together until a Dragonsteel employee came up to me and they said, "Did you hear what Brandon said about your performance?" I said, "No, what did he say?" And they said, "While you were performing, Brandon turned to somebody and he said, 'That's my wit.'" And that just like that, yeah, that just like that was it for me. That was it. The waterworks started then. I was like, ah. So that was like the most surreal, just amazing thing to hear. Like, amazing, amazing. Pero,
además del comentario de Brandon, es que no conozco a nadie que no piense eso.
Apart from Brandon, I don't know anybody who doesn't think that. Everybody shares his thoughts.
Thank you very much. There was one guy who commented something negative, and it took everything inside of me to not respond with something really wit-like about how, oh, well, since somebody doesn't like it now I know that it's great art. It couldn't be great art if everybody, you know. So now I know it's not a bad thing that somebody disagreed. It's a good thing because now I know it must have been great art because somebody didn't like it.
Tú como fan, también, además de participar en la obra, viste La Puerta Jurada, viste Shadesmar, viste cómo estaba todo montado. ¿Qué te pareció? Como, o sea, yo estaba chillando por dentro.
So, as a fan too, apart from taking part in the event, you saw the Oathgate, you saw Shadesmar, you saw everywhere. I was screaming internally, but how did it feel for you?
Oh my gosh, it was amazing. I think probably that feeling was slightly diminished because probably the first time you saw it, you walked through Shadesmar and then boom, it's all there. The first time I saw it, it was still kind of like an auditorium. It was like a tunnel with like curtains and stuff, and then like, you know, over the course of the day I saw it all get put together. So while the end result was still incredible, it was fantastic, beautiful. They nailed the aesthetic, I think. At the same time, for me, I don't think I ever got that like surreal, like whoa moment, just because I kind of saw it all come together. It's like I saw how the magic trick was done.
Hay una cosa que me da pena, y es que yo fui al primer evento porque no quería que nadie me explicase nada. Pero entiendo que en cada pase se van mejorando cosas. ¿Qué cambiasteis del primero al último pase?
So there's a thing that saddens me, and it's that I went to the first event because I didn't want spoilers at all. But these things grow up and change after each play. What things did you guys get to change between the first and last play?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Yeah, there were a bunch of things, honestly. Like after the first night, they started asking me to do an announcement where I kindly ask everyone to not bring their drinks to the dance floor because that's, you know, a slipping hazard. Kaladin would slip, fall, and, you know, get hurt and then, you know, have something else to complain about. Let's see. They asked us, we had to ask everybody, hey, please don't steal the goblets, because on the first night there were people who were like hoarding, like they had like a whole table full of like 16 goblets, and they're like do you want your goblet, put it here if you don't want it. And then like they had like a ton of them to like take with them out of the ball, and so on future nights we had to be like, those are not free. You will be getting one, but not those, so please leave them here. And then I think there was also a night where, because Brandon was there on that first night, but there was a future. There was a future night where Brandon was there and
with the family.
Yeah, with his family, and so they just kindly asked, you know, hey, if everybody could not bug Brandon, that would be great. He just wants to enjoy the night like everybody else. And then besides that, it was just kind of like a lot of little things. In every show, things are going to be like a little different and you kind of adjust to the audience and stuff. Like there was one show where there was a brief audio hiccup where the music didn't come on when all of the Bridge 4 spearmen were in place. And so my biggest regret will always be during that first show, when Dalinar's mic wasn't working, that I didn't stand up and then make a big joke about how Dalinar's Fabriel was messed up. Like in that moment I was thinking about it and I was like, should I? And then like by the time I realized I should have, it felt too late to do. So I was just like, oh man. But in a future show, something like minor had gone wrong where the music hadn't started. And I just yelled really loud, "This is awkward." And the whole crowd laughed. It broke that awkward moment, and then, you know, they played the music. So, like, in every show, there's, like, little things like that that are, like, a little bit different. And especially as you get more comfortable into the role, and you kind of, like, they really just gave me free rein. They said, we know that you understand the character. Do whatever you want to do. Do what Hoyd would do. So I would try different things. Like, there was a version where Dalinar's like giving a speech and like, you know, Dalinar, so I'm kind of sitting there and I'm like on my stool and I just kind of look like I'm falling asleep a little bit. And then, you know, in future nights I also started when it was Yasna's turn, I would, you know, turn and look up at her like a puppy, you know, be like, oh my gosh, Yasna's talking, amazing. So it was a lot of little stuff like that. I would definitely say like all the kinks got ironed out after that first show. Yeah.
Creo que en el primer show se os notaba nerviosos, pero también lo hizo como muy auténtico.
So, I think in the first show you could actually feel the nerves, but that also made it really, really authentic.
Oh, because, I mean, a wedding always has a little bit of nerves too, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. Especially because, I mean, it was a lot of people's first time having been on stage in years, I think, especially in front of a live audience. So that totally makes sense.
Hay una cosa que se puede considerar un poco spoiler, así que intentaré ser muy cuidadoso.
So there's a thing that's maybe considered as a spoiler, so I'll try to be really careful while speaking of it.
Hay una escena muy concreta y la que sucede en 3 segundos, donde aparece un personaje durante la boda y tú echas a ese personaje.
So during the wedding, there's a really brief scene of around 3 seconds where a character appears and you kick the character out.
¿Qué te contó Sanderson sobre ese personaje, sobre cómo lo tenías que hacer, la frase? Porque utilizaste una frase muy concreta. Se nombraba el nombre de un planeta.
So, what did Brandon tell you? Because you actually used a really specific sentence, and there was also a planet named. So, what did he tell you beforehand?
Yeah, so they sort of knew they wanted that scene in there, like from kind of the beginning. They thought that would be a really fun scene to have that character there. And actually the first time that scene was like conceived of, the people at Dragonsteel were like, say the person's name. Hoyd was originally going to say the person's name outright. And then also kind of disclose like a lot more information about, why that person was there. And then as time went on, I think they wanted it to be more of a subtle thing. So on that first night when I escorted that person out, told them, I think I'm trying to remember exactly what I told them that first night. I think it was more or less just like, you know, you don't belong here. This is her wedding day. Like, you shouldn't be here. You've had plenty of time to reconcile if you'd like to, but you shouldn't be here, type of thing. And then that first night, I think, like you said, you and then like a couple other people, I think I had like 8 to 12 people. Like, it was a lot of people coming up and asking me, like, hey, Whit, who was that? And so I had never been exactly told, like, definitely do or definitely don't say this person's name. So I was like, you know, I'll just play it to where, like, the people who think they know are going to be very confident that they know. So it was really just about reinforce that if you think you're on the right track, then you're probably on the right track. But in future sessions, that was actually another small change. In future sessions, I started yelling at her, why don't you go back to Braze for a while? Because that first night, like I said, I had like 8 to 12 people come up and ask about it, which isn't a problem. It's totally fine. But at a World Hopper Ball where there's like tons and tons of people and there's like lines to take pictures with everybody, I was like, I'll be a little bit more heavy-handed in future shows. That way, hopefully it'll mean less time answering questions and more people can get pictures taken. So that's why I added that line to future shows, just to kind of try to make everybody's entire experience better.
De hecho, con unos que estábamos en el hotel coincidimos. Yo fui al primer evento y ellos al segundo. Y cuando nos lo comentamos, me hicieron el... Dijeron, ha dicho la frase de ¿por qué no vuelves a ese planeta?
So there was a people in my hotel that I was with, and they went to the second one, I went to the first. And they told me, you said the quote, why don't you go back to the planet?
Yeah. Yeah, I felt like, that was just, people kind of knew that they were on the right track. And if I gave them just a little bit more, then it would kind of get people to the point where they're like, okay, yeah, I'm pretty sure. and that way, like, you know, they can enjoy their night a little bit more, hopefully, and people can kind of have one more nugget of information to go and speculate about. So
me da un poco de pena porque el personaje este en cuestión apenas se le ha dado, no sé ni quién es la actriz que la interpretó. En cambio, sí que sé quién hizo de Shallan, de Adolin, de Kaladin y demás, y me da un poco de pena. No sé si quieres decir su nombre o quién fue o lo que sea.
So it saddens me a bit that this character and the actress barely got a spotlight. And I don't know who she is, while I know who the rest of the characters were played by. So I don't know if you'd like to say her name or say something about her so we can also get to know person, we barely know.
Yeah. So the person who played that character was actually somebody who was working with Paladin, who was the company who put together the ball. So it was less of like a, this poor actress has only got like, you know, her 10 seconds on the whole show. It was less of that and more like, okay, this is someone who, you know, we can put in costume who will look pretty close to how this character is supposed to look. And they can easily do this role in between their other duties. And they were also like a big fan. I don't think there's any issue with sharing the person's name. But her name was Sarah Seligson. And so she worked at, she was helping out Paladin with like a ton of stuff backstage and figuring everything out. I think she's definitely on Instagram. I think it's her Abby's like a picture of Indiana Jones. But I don't think she's super active on there.
Buen trabajo, Sara.
Great job, Sara.
Yeah. She did do a great job. It was I'm glad that we got to know each other, you know, pretty well before I had to grab her and kind of manhandle her out of the ball.
Ya, yo creo que la última pregunta ya, porque no quiero molestarte más. ¿Qué tal fue el prepararse el speech de la boda? Porque la verdad que fue muy divertido.
So, last question, because I don't want to bother you anymore.
Oh, how was, no, not at all.
How was preparing the speech for the wedding?
Oh, like Whit's kind of big one that he did? It was good. I think I'm a very like auditory person, like auditory like learner. I'll hear somebody say a sentence and like I can just connect it back to like a movie. Like if it's like a line that I've heard in a movie, like that's just how my brain works. So what I ended up doing was I recorded myself doing the speech, just reading it. And then I would just listen to it, like whenever I walked the dogs or something, I would just listen to it in my AirPods and kind of say it along with myself. And that was like it made it so easy to memorize it all. And it's actually funny because they tried to trim out like, I think a sentence or two out of my speech, because they were like, we're going to take like a little bit of, you know, your time from here, and then we're going to give Shalon a couple more lines. And you know, I joked with them like, how dare you, but you know, it was all a joke. But then I get up there, man, and like I get up there and I've practiced it one way the entire time, and like it just started coming out. And I think there was one show where I realized I did it, because a lot of times you get up there and you're not thinking, like you're not thinking what line comes next, you're just saying them, like you know what to say, so you just kind of get up there. If you think too much, that's when you'll forget. And so there was one moment where I was like oh no, like I said the line, and like kind of threw myself off a bit, even though I don't think anybody caught it. But after that point, I went up to him. I was like, sorry, I think I said the line. They were like, you said it in every show so far. They're like, it's not a big deal. Just keep doing what, you know, whatever works. I was like, oh, okay. Sounds great. So it was good. It wasn't too bad to prepare for.
Antes de terminar, no sé si quieres decir alguna cosa que nos hayamos dejado, algo que quieras comentar, lo que tú veas.
So before we finish, is there anything you think we've forgotten to speak about, or anything you'd love to say? Whatever, feel free to say it.
I don't think anything that we've forgotten about, but like, you know, if you were at the World Hopper Ball, thank you very much for not punching me in the face, and for, you know, saying such nice things. I'm genuinely just so glad that everybody like enjoyed the portrayal of Wit as much as they did. Like, that is like the dream come true, ultimate best case scenario, best Christmas gift I could have gotten this year, you know, was having the community that I love and am a part of, like, accept the art that I created for them. Like, that's so cool. That's beautiful. So, really just to thank you to everybody who thinks of me when you read the books, and like, that's so cool. That's so kind. Yeah. That's really all, I guess. I'm just glad I got to do it, you know.
Jackson, ¿te mereces volver a interpretar a Hoyt?
You deserve to play Hoyt again.
Fingers crossed.
Voy a pedirte algo que si no te apetece, si no quieres, si te da pereza, lo entiendo perfectamente. Yo normalmente despido el programa de una manera, pero hoy tenemos a un invitado especial y sería muy bonito despedir el programa con insultos de Sagaz. Así que si tú quisieras insultar al podcast, a mí o incluso a Mario, yo estoy seguro que se deja, sería un honor.
So, when we finish the podcast, I usually finish it in a certain way, but as we have such a special guest as Wit, I'd love, if you're down for it, if not, it's totally fine, that if you could end up the program roasting either the program, Borja, or me, and just some Wit wisdom to finish today's episode.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Right now?
Yeah, sure.
You look so ugly, it's as though someone tried and failed to get the warts off your face through aggressive application of sandpaper. You are less of a human being and more of a lump of dung with aspirations. If someone took a stick and they beat you repeatedly, it could only serve to improve your features.
Muchas gracias.
Thank
You're
you.
Very welcome. You're very welcome.
Como dice nuestro querido amigo y oyente Kelsier, siempre habrá otro capítulo de podcast más. Hasta el siguiente. Bye bye.
Bye. Thank you guys.